This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 16th of March 2021. I'm Khoo Soo Chuang and I'm with Philip C and Wong Xiaoning. In about 15 minutes, we'll talk about the retail recovery with Tan Hai Sin of Retail Group Malaysia. But before that, markets.
Yeah, it's been a fantabulous day in the US, record-breaking. The Dow closed up 0.5%, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ up 1%, driven from consumer and tech stocks. Crossing over to Asia, you see it's also generally green, except for Singapore down 0.4%, Nikkei up 0.2%, Shanghai down 1%, Hang Seng up 0.3%, but back home in KL inched 0.3% up.
So talk about markets. We've got on the line with us Joe Quinlan, the Chief Market Strategist for the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, another record day for the Dow and the S&P. What are the key takeaways for you from this streak?
Well, it's just the, people are pricing in the fact that the backup in the yield curve is reflective of stronger than expected growth. Inflation numbers last week were very tame, very mute. So it's kind of like you're having your cake and eating it too. Good growth, good earnings on the upside with muted inflation. So the Fed has our back and there's a lot of money being spent here in the U.S. given the fiscal stimuluses.
Now, we look at financial markets, though. I think we're still very preoccupied with rising bond yields. So how do you think the Fed will address this in their rate decision and subsequent meetings this week?
Well, I mean, they got to thread the needle. It's not what they do, it's what they say. And I do think the Fed has some cover because of the numbers last week for the consumer price index, PCEs, were pretty muted. So, I mean, they kind of live for another day. But they will, I think they'll try to be balanced about the risk on the upside, the downside, acknowledging that growth is accelerating. So, I mean, we've got some people now forecasting 10% real GDP growth annualized in the first quarter here. So, I mean, I don't know if it's that strong, but the Fed will acknowledge the risk, but say they're going to be patient and let it run hot.
And Joe, staying on this topic, right? Janet Yellen was interviewed on CNBC just a few days ago, and she said that they have the tools to address inflation when it happens. Now, what kind of tools is she referring to?
Well, we do have the tools. It's just how do you use them? A scalpel or like a hammer? With the tools is just to raise rates and stop the bond purchasing. It could be a little combination of both. So, but Janet Yellen is right that we have the tools. The Fed has the tools to keep inflation becoming out of control, a la what we saw in late 70s, early 80s. So they have the tools, but I think people, as I've said before, they don't know what inflation is. So like when it's here, it could spook the markets, add the volatility, but I would be a buyer on that type of scenario.
I think, Joe, I think you're right in pointing out good growth, good earnings, and a lot of liquidity in the system, especially in the first quarter. And you talk about 10% annualized GDP growth. What's your sense of whether that money is going to be reinvested in CapEx or whether that's going to take the form of more share buybacks?
I think it'd be a little bit of both, like dividends, capital expenditures. We're actually running into a labor shortage already, so I think it's going to go towards more automation. No doubt about it. Robots, bots, that's going to be key in that sense. So that'll play out. Corporations are flush with cash because they refinanced last year at very low rates. Consumers have a lot of cash. Maybe they won't spend it all. They're going to pay down some debt. But I think the big winner here is automation. I really do. If you're going to have any earnings squeeze, what you do automate and boost productivity. I think we're in the midst of a CapEx cycle in and around automation.
So, Joe, are you betting heavily on automation stocks, though? Is there value to be found in places like Japan and China for names like that? Robotics, I guess?
Yeah, we've always been long in robotics, particularly the big European robotics manufacturers, particularly Japan. Japan's like a robotic superpower for sure. Less so, China's more of a user. So, for sure. That's kind of where we're going. You see, I don't know if you noticed, the birth rates are plunging. Global birth rates are plunging, which means that shrinking labor force that we're experiencing across the world is going to just become accentuated as we go deeper into this decade and beyond. So that means more automation.
Yeah, Joe, besides automation and tech, and another beneficiary today was consumer stocks. That's driven primarily by the Biden stimulus. What's your prognosis for the long-term view on consumer stocks and retail stocks?
Oh, I think they'll do well because the money that a lot of folks are going to get from the government is going to be spent. I mean, a lot of these people live check to check. They need the money. They go out and spend it. Then we also had news last week. household net worth in the United States, household net worth, $130 trillion with a T, $130 trillion. So at the other end of the spending, you know, we got to kind of the lower income people, families with the transfer coming, they're going to spend it. And at the higher end, they've never been wealthier because of the real estate prices and the stock market. So it's really double barreled. It's coming from both sides, that consumer spending. So discretionary and staples, I think, do well here. If any pullback, buy them.
And last night, Joe, aviation stocks did really well. So you saw like Delta, I mean, all the American airlines moving up. Is it too early to put money into this game?
I would say it's not too late. I mean, remember United and some of these airlines, I mean, they were like, I don't know, under $20 at one point, you know, a year ago when things collapsed, they've come out of it. Government support has helped. So no, I don't think it's too late to put money to good work here in the airline industry, travel, leisure. We're in the early innings, but you know, I'm going to cruise lines. They're looking more attractive because we are going to see a massive snapback in travel. First, it's going to be domestic, then it's going to go global, and then it'll go business last. So there's a lot of room yet for these stocks to run.
Right. So building on the aviation story, right, because one of the key cost structures is oil. Oil prices have recovered from last year's lows. Are you concerned that they might keep rising to levels which could threaten the recovery in the U.S.?
You know, not yet. Not yet. I mean, gasoline prices are up around 25% in the last 3 weeks. People are noticing. But they have that extra additional income. So unemployment's declining. Incomes are going up. Government transfer. And I do think, as you know, once oil prices get to a certain level, you bring in those marginal producers. And that could be in the U.S., that could be along the periphery of OPEC or Russia or the OPEC members themselves. So every time oil prices get to where we're at, 65, 70, that induces more supply. And therefore, then the prices start to come back down. So, to me, I'm not worried about kind of the negative shock of where oil prices are today just yet.
Yeah, Joe, some anecdotal viewpoints from you, if possible, on a personal front. What's your sense of the vaccine rollout program in America, and how well is it going?
It's going. It's ad hoc. It's fragmented. It's state to state, but it's remarkable, how quickly it's happening. People are frustrated. It takes a while. But there's frustration state to state. I mean, in South Carolina, people are skipping appointments. I live in Pennsylvania, and I have an appointment. It wasn't that difficult. In New Jersey, it seems like everyone's already done. It's kind of a scattered shot approach. You know, it's kind of how we handled the disease at first. It was like ad hoc, uncoordinated. But this is uncoordinated, but it's really ramping up. There's a lot of supply out there. The biggest issue for the United States would be, okay, where do we send this excess supply globally? The Europeans want it, the Mexicans, Canadians, everyone wants it. That's the big problem we're going to have. So it's rolling, it's happening. We're doing like 2.5 million shots a day. Pharmaceuticals, hospitals, armories—it's all in. It's coming much faster than people realize.
Right. So, just going to another country which is doing very well in the vaccination, which is the UK. Really leading up to Brexit, and what's your prognosis about UK gilts and equities? Are they good investment opportunities there?
I mean, it's ironic. You know, meaning the euro started to weaken here. The pound's gotten a little bit of a bid because the EU itself is backsliding. They probably went into recession in the first quarter. UK is coming out. They're doing a better job vaccinating. They're cutting some trade deals with Canada, US, and some Japan as well. So, I mean, I'm not ready to declare victory for the Brits for leaving the EU. I think that was a wrong move. But near term, they're looking like they got their act together better than, say, the continent. And we'll see how long that lasts. So I think there's a bid for, you know, a lot of assets in and around Great Britain, UK.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for your time. And that was Joe Quinlan, the Chief Market Strategist for the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. You know, guys, we've been talking on BFM to Joe for many, many years, right? And he's always had a consistent level of optimism about him, even in the heights of the financial crisis and coming out of that. And, you know, just now, in just the last conversation we've had with him, you know, just in terms of this very spontaneous question on the vaccine rollout, it's fast. The countries are all in. It might be a scattergun, but it's happening, right? Mm. And basically, armories are in, hospitals are in, pharmacies
it's
are in.
It's all out, isn't
it's
it?
It's all out, right. And then he's talked about how there's a real reflation in aviation, there's a real reflation in automation. He's buying selectively, but he's buying well. You know, one gets the sense that in the last 10, 12 years, he's really been staying with the wave of liquidity and optimism, despite the little you know, I don't know, from a fund manager's perspective, quite instructional. And sometimes you just got to avoid the noise. And it's the same now. I mean, look at Delta. Delta Airlines is $50, right? When Warren Buffett sold all his aviation, it was about $18-19, right? It's more than doubled in the last, 6 months?
Yeah, I think those aviation stocks have hit a one-year high already.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you look at fund management, some people believe in staying invested.
Yeah,
you know, riding out all the volatility, because if you try to time markets, you might get it wrong. And some people do get it spectacularly wrong. Some people get it spectacularly right. It's not an easy feat. I think many fund managers now practice, you know, some form of indexation. So deciding what is your asset allocation and keeping consistent and buying throughout dollar cost averaging kind of methodology for some of them.
Yeah, I mean, the other guy that's been very consistent is Ray Dalio, right? And he's very vocal on LinkedIn. He's always stayed, well, not always, but in the last 1 year, he's basically said cash is trash and you've got to stay invested.
Well, cash is paying you nothing or less than nothing.
Well, precisely.
So you have to stay invested.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at China, right? Because we've been talking ad infinitum about Jack Ma and how Alibaba has had an financial rebuffed and he's been told to sell South China Morning Post. Well, Pony Ma heads up Tencent, right? And Tencent yesterday lost $62 billion in terms of market valuation. People are concerned that the regulators are now turning their attention towards Tencent because along with Alibaba, that's the other big dog in the room.
Well, I think some background to this was because the China's antitrust watchdog actually fined Tencent on Friday for failing to seek prior approval for its 2018 investment in an online education app. Now, the fine was only $77,000, right? Really chump change for Tencent. But as you can see, the impact on its share price has really walloped it.
I think it's the messaging, right, that's coming out
Absolutely.
To all these fintech giants, right, that, hey, we are watching you. Have you become too big for your own good? Have you monopolized the market in China so much so there are no alternatives? Has it grown even more powerful than the state enterprises? So I think now it's clearly being the writing's on the wall for all these guys. I'm not surprised if then they look beyond these Tencent and look at other very, very large enterprises in China them back under control in inverted commas.
I wonder also how much the Chinese government has been watching what's happening on the social media space with Facebook and Amazon and Apple in terms
of... Well, you can't get Facebook in China,
no, correct,
theoretically,
but in terms
right?
of how big they've gotten and how basically the difficult they are to manage, right?
Well,
and not them not wanting their guys to become as uncontrollable as those guys.
Well, think about which country was the pioneer for digital currency? China, with their digital yuan. They were the ones that were pioneering the need to create its own digital currency.
Well, they do that because then they can monitor every single transaction that you make and know exactly
yes.
what you're buying, where you're going and what you're doing, right?
So
they want control, but they want control with themselves.
So what does that mean for valuations of fintech businesses, right? Because according to the story, right, this guy called Robin Zhu, a Bernstein analyst, Sanford Bernstein, he has a multiple of up to 8x basically Tencent's fintech business on trailing revenue, okay? So with this thing, how do you value, if you're an investor, how do you value a fintech business knowing full well that the regulators could come down on you? And, you know, the SEC could do the same thing because they say, in China, they've done this, we can do this.
Well, then you'll give it a much lower valuation because at the end of the day, right, is it a financial company or is it a tech company? And if you know their regulatory and compliance pressures, then you will not probably be so generous with your valuations.
Age-old question.
Okay. 19 minutes past 7. We'll come back after this with discussions on the retail industry with Tan Hai Sin of Retail Group Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.